All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to our ICAT Task Force meeting. Here we are getting down to the wire here. Let's see. Of our task force members today, we have Cheryl Turney, Alex Voss, our co-chairs, Alexis Snyder, Anil Jain, Gus Gerarcy, Ram Sriram, Rich Landon, and Sasha Termok. Are there any other members on the phone?
Hey, this is Tom Mason.
Hi, Tom. Okay, and with that, I'll turn it over to our co-chairs to get us started.
Thank you so much, Lauren. And today what we have planned is a little bit of the summary and action plan of what we did last time. Alex is going to lead us again in a broader intersection discussion wrap-up, which we're really looking forward to. I'm going to review or lead the review on report outline and framework. Then we have public comment and next steps, so we can go to the next slide. So just a little bit about what we talked about last week. We had a very great discussion about synthetic testing. We also had a very animated discussion about price transparency, and we had a lot of people speak up on that point, which I think was really, really good. We also, in that meeting, talked about some policy and regulatory barriers, which we're going to expand on today. And then also we touched on third-party credentialing as it relates to supporting the patient. So we want to appreciate everybody in their ability to weigh in on the discussions last week, and look forward to finishing up those topics because we're really getting down to the wire now. So I'm going to turn it over to Alex Scott, who's going to lead the conversation today with the broader intersection. Alex?
Thank you, Cheryl. We're going to go ahead and start to work through our attempt at synthesizing our discussions from 9-8, 9-15, and 9-22. I'm hoping that my screen will be shared with all of you, or if so, I just need an indication that maybe it's, yep, here it comes. So I'm going to first start out with sharing my screen related to the broader intersection themes and report content development that we've been doing, building on the last three conference calls that we've had. I really want to do a shout out to Michael Witte in preparing a synthesis of your feedback and to help us identify guiding principles, ideal state, and recommendations content that we need to weave into our final report. So today will be a nice opportunity to do a touch point on whether we've heard you correctly and get some reaction so we can work with our editor to weave in some of the new principles and recommendations. Additionally, we thought we should finish up the third-party credentialing in support of patient at the center. There was a discussion that we did not get to complete last week related to how do we handle the credential access, not like credentialing as in a provider credentialing, but as in an individual supporting a third-party app having access to its data. And then we want to do a final call for consideration areas that we need to explore in the broader intersection discussion. As you've heard several times, we are in what we believe to be the home stretch. So this will be a really good conversation for us to finish up today. And that will then also enable us to move into our subsequent agenda items where Cheryl will be talking through the outline we've created for the draft report. And so I'll be displaying that, taking notes as well. So without further ado, now that I've set up our focus area for today, I'm going to move us into our synthesis of the broader intersection discussions. So what I want to do is sort of walk through this document to get reactions, and I will take notes as we go and to capture any additional thoughts that we may have. And Cheryl's going to assist me with monitoring the hand raising so that we can make sure to get all your questions. The goal will be to give us a, yep, you got it, no, you didn't, and here's why, very perfunctory sort of feedback so we can try to get through this and then continue with the rest of the discussion areas that we already identified. So the first guiding principle that we thought we heard from you, I've given a short title name to, of a level playing field, not attached to it, but hopefully you can give me some feedback that on whether or not we should be adding a new guiding principle that addresses an on-ramp that such that players at all levels of technology and standards use maturity can integrate data at the individual patient and population levels. So we're thinking that that should be a guiding principle that we would add. I'm going to go to the second guiding principle just so I can get feedback on the two of these at the same time, especially since I know that there are a number of members who are still joining. The second guiding principle that we thought we heard from you could be maybe a short title of in workflow, which is really the concept that we've discussed numerous times. If we really don't want portals, we want everything to be within the natural workflow of a given stakeholder. So information should be available in the system that the relevant actor normally uses in regular workflow, and that we weren't sure, and I put a note in here to get feedback that we could consider this maybe its own workflow guiding principle, but we might want to carefully consider the alignment with or the difference from the prior authorization generated guiding principle of real-time data capture and workflow. So for right now, we can certainly add an additional in workflow, no portals sort of guiding principle, and then use our upcoming review period to further hone our thinking about how these fit together in the report. I'm going to pause there and see if there's any questions, Cheryl.
Right now, we have no one with their hand raised.
Okay.
I will comment since no one else has, but I do think that based on the discussions that we've had, we essentially did state these things multiple times, not only within the broader intersection conversation, but also within the prior authorization conversation that we had. So I do think both of these guiding principles, if they were implied, need to be maybe beefed up, or if they weren't specifically called out, then we need to add them, because I do think that it is, an issue. And since we had the meeting last week, there were a couple of meetings I attended. One was a Karen meeting, and a patient spoke up talking about their care journey as an advocate for an individual. And it just really focuses so much on the need for an easy-to-use workflow to get information from one provider to another, and having the ability for all of that data to be shared in a natural environment, and some of the things that can happen when it isn't. And while I was speaking, now Rich has raised his hand, so I think we can go to Rich, and then if there's others that have things they'd like to offer, go ahead.
Yes, Rich, I'd just briefly like to agree that these should be guiding principles, particularly the second one, to strong signal to do away, or to strategically to do away with portals and favor a more in-workflow, reduced burden design of the system.
Thank you for that feedback, Rich.
Yeah. I do think that anyone that has clinical experience that weighs in here, it's going to be very important, because they're going to be able to speak to this, specifically, obviously, because it is something that impacts them. But it is certainly going to be a burden on the smaller providers who maybe are not hooked up to the large EMR systems, that have the ability to hook all these bells and whistles into it. Anil has raised his hand as well.
Anil?
Yeah, I just wanted to speak to make sure I'm understanding what you mean by portals, because I think I would agree that we want to make it seamless in their workflow, but we're not saying that we would not favor portals where they're single sign-on. I mean, you don't want to – I don't think we want to limit the kind of technologies that would help the various stakeholders with the task at hand, as long as it's embedded in line with the workflow, whether it's a portal that's got single sign-on on the back end, it shouldn't matter, right? Or am I missing something?
I think what you're saying is accurate. So maybe how this is worded, Alex, we need to tweak a little bit, because I think the key is that whatever we recommend, it needs to be within the workflow without added burden to go outside of it.
Okay. I think I've tried to capture that consideration. So what I'm hearing is, okay, I'm also seeing, I think, Andy Truscott. Just welcome, Andy. I think you just joined and your hand's up.
Yes, I was listening before. Hey, it's Andy here. I don't think we should say no portals. I think we should say that no portal is mandated or required. A portal could well be part of reflecting workflow, et cetera, but it shouldn't mandate it.
Right. So, Andy, so we're going to open up a can of worms here, but I need to go there. Under the direct data entry capabilities permitted under HIPAA, portals are by de facto already permitted.
Yeah. So we shouldn't say they're not.
So
go ahead, Alex.
That's not a can of worms. That's correct.
No, I just realized I was going back to open up a can of worms of prior discussion around direct data entry. That's what I'm referring to. And so how would you modify what you're seeing us present here on no portals that don't have single sign-on integration?
I don't quite understand the language, especially no portals that don't have single sign-on integration. Do you mean especially portals that don't have, or do you especially mean not portals that? I don't understand the language you're typing that first part of the sentence.
Yeah, because I'm trying to do them in shorthand to try to take notes while we're on the call. So I really am referring, these are my shorthand notes right here, and I'm referring to more of this feedback summary that we had reviewed at the top of the call, which I apologize, you may not have heard, and that we were really talking about this idea of...
I was biding my time. I would actually prefer we say mute on whether it portals or not. I think it's implicit from the fact that we're talking about APIs that may or may not be utilized by a portal with other constraints and controls around them. But that's my personal view.
So maybe wording that says, and we have a lot of hands raised now, maybe wording that says, Alex, instead of no portals, but if portals are used, they need to be within the natural workflow with single sign-on. That's what I'm hearing, right?
And this is Anil. That's what I was trying to say, just to be clear.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
I got that part.
All right, well, we have Rich with his hand up, and then we have a few others. Go ahead. Rich?
Yeah, I'm thinking we probably got two issues going on here, and I'm getting a little confused. I agree with the single sign-on, since we're talking about if we're going to use portal that should be accessed within the workflow, single sign-on makes all the sense in the world, definitely yes. But I think the way I'm looking at portals fundamentally, it's an alternative use particularly by health plans, where there are adopted federal standards for transactions, in our case in point, prior auth transaction, and the portal represents more of a specific to that particular payer work process, whether that's screen scraping or manual data entry. So I would resist not including a statement saying for that use of portals, those need to go away. And if portals can be reconfigured in such a way as to utilize standard transactions without any additional work by the provider, any customization or any one-off solutions, that would be certainly acceptable. But as Alex, I think, started to say, what we've seen with the evolution of the HIPAA exception for direct data entry
is all sorts of one-off solutions by payers. So if a provider has 30 health plans, they've got 30 different ways of submitting the same transaction on 30 different portals. And that's the piece that I think it's time we put a stake in the sand and say those need to go away.
So I'm going to call directly on Andy Truscott because, Rich, what I think that you just summarized is what was discussed on the prior calls very clearly. So there's now a difference of opinion, and folks, we need to reconcile that so that we know how to, we do it here or we do it in the draft report, and I'm seeing lots of hands go up. So, Arian, please. You're first in the queue.
Thank you. Yes, I don't think we are, I would submit that we are not split or have significant disagreement. I hear consensus around the outcome objective of accessing capability in workflow without special effort. And just hear the careful nuance that doesn't mean that there should be no such things as portals, but that portals with separate logins that aren't integrated into workflow shouldn't be the only or required way to complete a given task. And I don't think that conflicts or objects with allowing the use of portals. So I want to submit that as a possible point of consensus, that we have consensus around the notion that capabilities should be available and should be designed to be available in workflow without special effort on behalf of the provider or staff extender, and that portals, while they may be used, may well be used, should not be required, particularly required with separate login or out of workflow.
Yeah, and I'm going to say, I guess I'm having a little bit of, I want to be a good co-chair, and I want to be a really good teammate and notes capturing here. So my conflict in my own head is, folks, we got some really substantive stuff to get into at this point in the rest of the document and in the other agenda items. So I think Arian just nicely sort of garnered the consensus. I'm hoping I kind of captured Jocelyn's comment from the chat box about today's DDE provision of portal is really tomorrow's smart app, and that's what we're trying to get at. So I'm looking for sort of wrapping this item up so we can move into some of the other discussion areas. So with that said, I'll ask for final remarks. Arian, your hand is still up, so I think that's just a hanging Chad. If not, okay. So Andy, and then Jocelyn.
Okay, so quickly, I agree with pretty much all the comments have been made. I don't think we want to drain this out too much longer. I would suggest that we don't say single sign-on integration because there are other approaches, seamless logon, etc., and we're being a bit prescriptive. Arian, I think, hit the nail on the head, as I would expect, when he said without any special effort. I think that would be the sentiment put in. And to capture Jocelyn's smart comment as well, I would just say if user interfaces are used, they must have integration that requires no special effort on behalf of the user. That's it.
Okay. I think that was might have been Jocelyn.
No, I'm all set. I'm just going to say ditto.
Okay. All right. So thank you, everybody. So I'm going to move on to the next area. One of the things that we heard was related to a potential ideal state, and I wanted to affirm if this topic is a part of a broader vision statement that needs to precede prior auth, and if so, how might we tie that in with some of our other guiding principles, knowing that we're trying to have guiding principles and recommendations have some correlation. With that sort of context, one of the things that we discussed was the stakeholder continuum. And so a converged ecosystem that includes stakeholders across the continuum, including public health, vital records, research, and policymakers, would be able, without creating additional data capture or other burdens on patients and providers, have the information that they need. Could also support specialty and long-term care settings. And that capturing and exchanging data across all these functions seamlessly will require consistency and has the real potential to reduce burden, furthering our overall objective of record once and reuse. if we've heard that sort of ideal state thought process correctly about stakeholders across the continuum, we think that we also heard a few recommendation areas. To establish a minimum data set that allows a refined way of looking at an aligned clinical administrative picture for these downstream stakeholders to see what they can do as a baseline that may need to be expanded later, but again, not based on additional data collection by the clinical providers. So what can we give them to start that will work, and how can we then expand that over time is that first related recommendation area that we heard. The second one was related to information models and that we should establish information models in stages to align the clinical and administrative data for secondary uses based upon the highest societal priorities. This would need to take into account minimum necessary requirements and considerations. It may also affect the data concepts and elements that USCDI needs to reflect as we move forward. Thirdly, we thought that there was a need to review the current administrative transactions and associated value and code sets to ensure USCDI supports those downstream functions as well. So I would ask if you feel that we did hear, I'm going to make this a little smidgen smaller so we can see all of this on one page, that did we hear you correctly that we want to speak to a broader vision statement about a converged ecosystem? And if so, are the three the high-level recommendation areas in line with what we heard before? I see Andy's hand is up.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'd probably insert the word illustrative in front of information models. I don't think we should be defining constraining information models, but illustrative ones which would meet the needs.
Thank you. And we will give you lots of time to infuse important wordsmithing concepts because we're going to be releasing a report to you, a draft report for your review later this week. Anil.
Yeah, just a couple thoughts. I think where we talk about public health vital records research and policymakers in that converged ecosystem, we should change it from research to research and innovation. We want to make sure we allow for that innovation that needs to happen in the broader. The other comment has to do with really thinking through the sort of the different governance models and regulatory aspects that all these different disparate stakeholders have to deal with, and what are we going to say about that? Because in some ways, it's one of the biggest barriers. To allowing for a seamless flow between these different stakeholders. I can't simply collect a piece of data in my clinical setting and then turn it over to somebody for research unless there's IRB and all sorts of other things that are going on. The final thing, I think it's underlined even, the word without creating additional data capture. It's a pretty strong word. Maybe our goal should really be to make it more efficient, but I'm not sure we're going to support stakeholders without some additional minor work on behalf of the ones that are in the field, because you might have to check off a box saying yes, you understand that this information might be used for research, and that's not without any additional data capture. That's minimal, but I just want to make sure we're not trying to say something very, very extreme here.
Good point.
Okay, I see Jocelyn's head or hand is up.
So I think adding on to that point, when I was listening, one of the things that struck me was I would include community and caregivers to the list of stakeholders, and I don't know if those are the right phrases to use, but I think we need to get sort of the full list of stakeholders called out. And I think that that adds on to the point that was just being made, which is I think it's about the right data and the right amount of data at the right time, and reuse and standards enables that. Because sometimes it might just be about creating the hook in for the minimal set of data that I need as a community caregiver, right? Or as the list service that needs to pick somebody up versus getting the entire patient record, this, you know, agreed upon patient record because you're actually providing direct care for the patient. So I think it's more about the connectedness and the reusability than it is about saying, okay, once I actually decided I'm going to set somebody up with a list service, I now need to get the address of where they're staying, you know, their cell phone number so that I can, you know, get them set up on the app. I think that, to me, I think that it's more about the connectedness than it is about not coming back and asking for more different information.
I don't see any more hands raised, Alex.
I see Anil's hand is raised. I'm not sure if it's a hanging chat, though. Okay. It's back up. Anil?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, I add that. I think we also, if it's not crystal clear in this, within this ecosystem of the various stakeholders, that it's really the patient or the member or the who's got us to making sure we allow the information to flow to those places where we can't lose sight of the fact that the patient is the center of this.
Yes, Anil is breaking up for me. I'm having a really hard time hearing.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah,
it's about being patient-centric, making sure we don't lose sight of that. Patients should decide where and how information flows within the current constraints of all those different stakeholders.
Okay. I'm sorry, I was just responding to Andy's note in the chat box. So please guide me as to what I missed that I needed to capture in your statement.
So I'm just in the second bullet point there.
I got yours. I'm sorry. I'll add it here. I was really trying to get Anil to tell me what I missed from him, his comments.
His name's Anil. Not
okay.
Me.
I know I screwed up. I apologize, Andy.
All right. So this is Anil. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes,
we can,
Anil.
Okay. So I think in the transcript it looks right, but I think the main point, and I'm looking at the text here, it's really around, now I'm not seeing it now. Not sure what happened there. It could be my connection. Let me just wait. Oh.
I scrolled back up. I'm not sure which portion you're speaking to, Anil, and what portion of the document.
You were asking, you were asking whether you captured my comments correctly, and I'm trying to look for them.
I captured them down here. I started to break them apart because I was running as too solid. I was losing points because people were building on other people's comments.
Okay. So I think the two things to capture is that it should be patient-centric. Each of the different stakeholders that are listed have a different relationship with the patient or consumer, and we can't lose that. So it has to be patient-centric. The second thing is that we have to make sure that we don't oversimplify this idea that that just by having this information being collected, that we can just start pushing it around to all the different stakeholders without going back to the patient. That consent process is going to be important.
Okay, I think I got it. Thank you. Are there other comments on the continuum considerations? Okay. I am not seeing the hands raised, so I'm going to move on to the next area. One of the things that we talked extensively about on the last call in particular was the idea that price transparency is a thorny and complex issue which would warrant a separate task force to really evaluate it, and that our recommendation would be that as such, and that we potentially could look at a new guiding principle or possibly modify the transparency one to really reflect the dynamics related to differences across state lines, which we've talked about in a variety of ways, whether it was in privacy complications or the ability for machine learning and automated processing capacities by actually codifying those state rules. I'm looking at the chat box and I'm seeing Andy making a comment about focus on outcomes, not implementation approaches. And what I'm seeing in that post. No. What I'm thinking is that maybe we need to make sure we called out that principle more clearly, because I don't know that we have it in one of the 8 or 9 that exists.
Well, I'm not sure we agree with it either.
Say again?
I agree. I'm not sure the entire task force agrees with it.
That's why we need to discuss it.
Yep.
I agree with you, Andy. It's a tough one.
Okay, so I'm going to come back to that in a moment. So I want to let me put it as a placeholder, and I want to give it its due time. So before moving on to that point, I think price transparency, we're clear. We want to make a recommendation about it. We may need to just, as we're reviewing our guiding principles, decide whether or not we're clear enough on the state lines aspect and transparency or not, and we can come back to that one. I do want to talk about next about the ideal state related to test data, that there was discussion about a national approach for an ecosystem with synthetic test data that would include the great complexities of data and transactions so that app developers and partners can test against this, and that this would really help us with more broad-based testing and validation of the standards. And so that we came up with a recommendation that a test bed should be supported as a public service at the national level and account for the variances in state laws. I'm looking for anybody having concerns with that. Jocelyn.
So as we face down our first reg around some of our implementation guides on the DaVinci front, I think that the issue around test data are incredibly important. I'm not so sure that there needs to be one all-breathing, all-doing, all-serving actual platform. I think the question is about having data that's fungible and meets the needs across the community in an ongoing source as sort of the data set and the use cases expand versus it being one thing to do all things for everyone. I just, that makes me nervous about sort of flexibility and nimbleness.
I'm glad you brought that up because I thought that there might be some reaction to this, that there's sort of couple schools of thought. There's we started out with like having somebody to create a synthetic test bed that could then be leveraged, but what got written up might be interpreted as the test bed and related services would be a public service and would be overarching. And so I'm curious to see how others feel about this, Jocelyn. I'm surprised we don't have more hands up yet. Is this something that we want the government to convene and infuse a direction, or do we want the government to actually provide the service? Hi, Andy. Your hand is up.
Well, gingerly, I can't speak to anybody else. There are products and platforms already out there which many of us run and operate around test data. I think there is probably a need and a recommendation we can make around a collection of test data sets potentially, which could be utilized. That I could see. I'm interested in what Anil thinks. and Arian. Actually, anybody, but I'm picking on you two because you both start with an A.
Well, this is Anil. Sure. I mean, I think it is always a nice way for the government to set up sort of the guardrails and the ask, and let industry and you know, public private sort of take a stab at it. It just I always favor that. But in terms of, I think we have to decide: do we want synthetic test data, or do we want to pool actual data that's been anonymized and de-identified? They're two very different things, and I would argue that if we've already got a mechanism in place where industry, working with regulators, working with standards bodies, provide test beds where there's connectors and APIs and data, that we shouldn't try to reinvent something. We should look at those different capabilities that we already have and try to put some guardrails around that and make some recommendations there. But I do like the idea of what is the role of pushing for a synthetic set of data that allows testing to happen, because no matter how hard you try to anonymize and de-identify real data, it always becomes a thorny issue. So that's my take on it.
Jocelyn.
So I really appreciate all of those comments. Having worked in a different industry before coming to healthcare, I'm always surprised at the scarcity of real test data that's available. And the amount of risk we incur as an industry by the kind of on-the-grid testing that participants do on a regular basis because of the challenges around VHI. So to me, I completely think that there's a role here for industry to supply services to do this. And I think it was Anil that was speaking, I think that this point about what data to use when, you know, when you use synthetic versus real, de-identified data. You know, there's variability in de-identified data that you'll never get with synthetic data because humans, right, are involved in the creation of the real data. And I think that to me, it's almost about the cyclicality of when and where you need the data. It's one thing to say we need to come up with sources of all payer claims data in an X12 format, right, because that's something that's been available and alive in the industry and in use for decades. It's another thing to say, as we unleash this clinical data and these workflows via API for clinical data or reusing claim data in new and novel ways, what is the role of synthetic initially, and then eventually the role for de-identified when the data actually begins to flow or flows more consistently or products become better defined or standards become better defined. So I think that it's a little bit of a soliloquy, I apologize, but I think that the where you are in the life cycle of where the data is needed is a question that needs to be answered about what type of data you need, but that there should be some sort of convening that's happening about how and where we enable the innovation by making the data available. Because the data and the lack of test data is a blocker, especially as we talk about patient-centric applications. A new entrance to the market.
Okay. Arian. Thank you, Jocelyn. Arian.
Thank you. So first of all, I had trouble raising my hand previously with respect to transparency. I think my perspective on that one is not that we should mandate a price transparency service, because those things are really complicated. To the extent that there is pricing or reimbursement data that is regularly available to business partners who were involved in the care of a patient and that is patient-specific, that data should also be available and accessible to the patient. With regard to this issue, you know, it seems like we're getting hung up on the difference between running a testing service and curating the availability of an implementation guide with good associated test data. And I wonder whether, just a probe for consensus, whether the latter is an area that we can all get behind, that any specification in this space, developed in this space with the convening power and coordinating power of the national coordinator, should be accompanied by tight conformance document and associated test data. So sorry for two issues.
Did I hear you correctly? If I say tight conformance and test data requirements for adopted standards?
Yes. Yeah, standards and implementation guidance, standards and specifications. There's a little geekery there in terms of the difference between those two.
Oh, yes, adopted, because it really is adopted implementation specifications,
yeah.
If I can type right. It's really not this. Okay. And this is what you're proposing, maybe is more of what we want to, as a new pivot on recommendation to be establish ONC to require tight conformance and test data requirements for any for advancement of an implementation guide as an adopted standard. I think that's really what you're recommending as
correct.
A recommendation. That's the pivot there. And I'm hearing Jocelyn sort of look at something different from maybe look at the life cycle. But we're generally, there's a what's the right sweet spot for ONC and the government to live in versus what is the responsibility of market. Subsequently, also nuance to at what point do you need what kind of data? So I'm not sure how we're going to transform this at this point, but those are the points I'm hearing so far. I'm not seeing any other hands up. And so what I would like to do is move into the last area that we had coming into this meeting, and which is our second to last guiding principle discussion. At the last meeting, Cheryl discussed an aspect related to patients having a third party credential to support the access and authorization and access functions to their data. And so we didn't really get a chance to finish off that discussion at the last meeting. And so I wanted to open it back up. Cheryl, did you want to make any sort of brief opening remarks to add extend what I already said? Start the conversation.
Thank you, Alex. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
I can.
I do appreciate that. I know that I was trying to explain what we were talking about by this, but you know, the vision, again, is if you're holding your app in your hand, wouldn't it be nicer to be able to go out to a third party or whoever it is, get a credential and use that for access to all of the connecting points that you want to make in your app versus having 30 connection points that have to be maintained in addition to your app as, you know, you being the patient having to go forward. And in the current framework, it's burdensome for the patient to have to connect all of these and remember all these different passwords and sign-ons that don't speak to one another and can't be shared, but also those in the current environment have to be maintained along with the app that they're utilizing. So I do think that this is something that you're going to hear more about in the future. I was on another couple meetings this week with other industry folks that were talking about the patient burden, and this, you know, kept coming up as an issue because it is limiting or inhibiting patients from even, you know, the idea of using apps, because if it's something that requires a lot of things for them to remember, they tend to abandon it in the middle and don't complete it. and the only ones that do are the ones that are severely sick, who in many cases need caregivers or others to help support them through the process. So I do think whatever we can recommend that really focuses on improving the patient journey is really important. And so, again, the recommendation is to provide the pathway for patients to elect and not require, but elect to utilize a third-party credential service if that's what they want to do, and to, again, encourage through, you know, some incentive, all of the systems that have to interact with those credentialing services to be able to adopt that credentialing, because all it is the they create the token, and that token who's been validated, and then that token gets exchanged in the background. So rather than each service creating a token, it would be a single token that's used across the landscape. And we have many hands these days, but yeah. So.
And so I thought you were going to call Alexis. Alexis, I think your hand was up first.
Yeah, I mean, I guess going back to the this being a separate guiding principle, or thought of it being one, I mean, I hear what Cheryl's saying. I think there's some good ideas there. I would offer that perhaps the guiding principle we've missed, we've talked a lot about access in lots of different areas under transparency, and perhaps we should pull some of those out and make a guiding principle for access, because they are two separate things. They can go hand in hand in certain pieces, but maybe we've missed the boat on a complete access guiding principle. And then this statement here, that patients should have a third-party credential, et cetera, seems more like an ideal state, and then maybe a recommendation for a third-party credential comes out, you know, under this new guiding principle of access. And that was my overall thought. And then just as a comment to some of the things that Cheryl had mentioned, I would just say I think it's a large overgeneralization to state that, you know, all patients as a whole have a hard time remembering different things and using different portals, and they start to fill out applications and then don't bother unless they're severely sick and really need to. So I just want to be careful about the overgeneralizations we use, because I think that's a large assumption about a great population of people. And I do agree that we absolutely need to be patient-centric, of course, patient and caregiver-centric, and make things as easy as possible with clear transparency and access. But I just want to be careful about making those overgeneralizations about folks.
Thank you. Trying to make sure I captured your access portion of the transparency guiding principle and create a new GP focused on the access, and then a corresponding, we could have a corresponding recommendation, but I think that is not eliminating your comment related to the need to maybe weave in some of the text that we had about this third-party credentialing aspect more of an ideal state than a guiding principle. I think I've captured that right. I don't know if there are any more hands up or if anybody wants to help me refine the notes.
I've got my hand up. I've got some connection issues with the new Adobe Connect, so I apologize for
that. I just saw it popped up. Hey,
there we go.
Voice works.
Yeah,
okay, there you
go. So I'm a believer in stay in our lane. I think having a robust ecosystem for patient-controlled identities, high-assurance identities that can be used across multiple settings, is something I've been a big advocate for in the past, present, and in the future. I don't know that it belongs as a hard requirement in this document. I agree on the future state orientation, that we should be designing towards a an ecosystem where high assurance patient identities can be reused across multiple settings of care. And I think it would be an appropriate guiding principle that any standards and implementation guidance that we create that are associated with patient access and interaction requirements be designed to accommodate and prefer the use of patient identity, patient proffered identity, high assurance identity, and authentication tokens. I know that was a whole lot to throw at you, but hopefully that makes
sense.
Yeah,
I know, because I actually almost feel like you conflicted yourself. In one vein, I felt like you're like, hey, high assurance identity is an important topic, not our swim lane. Let's leave this alone. And then it was like, but maybe we should go back and have a guiding principle. And then I got lost. I wasn't
sure if you were trying to compromise. Let me be clear. So number one, we shouldn't, as a side effect of this report, be creating requirements for high assurance patient identity and authorization services. That's the stay in our lane comment. Number two, we should also have as a guiding principle that any patient access standards and associated implementation guidance be designed to allow for the use of such patient identity and authorization. So it would be a bad idea if the very design didn't separate identity assurance and authorization from actual access to the service. And then I think it would be appropriate to talk about, but I'm less passionate about this last point, I think it would be appropriate to talk about a future state or ideal state where patients get access to high assurance identity credentials and authentication services and use those to access across multiple settings of care. But again, I'm more than happy to go back to my stay in the lane for that one if that's too ambitious. So the one that I do feel strongly about is we should make sure, I think it's appropriate, we should make sure in our guiding principles that any such standard certification criteria be designed to be accommodative of patient proffered high assurance identity and authorization. Hopefully that made more sense.
I hope I captured it right. I'm curious how two others feel about the guiding principles aspect, as well as the how far we should go on any recommendations.
I think the one thing, Alex, is that the guiding principle you have is patients should have a third-party credential. It's not that they should have. It's patients should have the that should be enabled so that if they desire to use it, they can use it. That's what I was saying.
Is that the tweak you were looking for? Patients should be enabled to have a third-party credential is what you're recommending.
Or the ability for a patient to have a third-party credential should be, yes. Yep. I don't know what other people think, but that's what I was recommending.
Hi, Emil.
Hey, yeah, I just double checking. Can you guys hear me? I got not a great connection. Okay.
No, actually, the team increased your volume, which has helped a little bit.
Oh, okay, wonderful. So I guess I'm not following something about why would we not allow the industry working with consumers who would want this to do it themselves, to set it up? Why do we need to put this forth? Is there something that prohibits us from allowing third-party credentialing? I'm not following that.
Without putting something in here, Anil, that allows for this, then the current mechanism today would have to be customized to support it. So all we're saying is that as we're recommending the convergence of data to focus on the patient, then allow the systems that are going to be updated to have this capability so this service can be enabled if the patient so desires, because it's going to make it a lot easier for them to integrate their data with a third-party app.
Right, but is there, I guess I'm not educated enough about what the restrictions are in play today to allow that to happen by having
a
consumer work with third party.
There needs to be a standard developed to allow it to happen. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. That's the problem.
So you're trying to avoid by having
a technical standard or a policy standard?
I think there needs to be a technical standard.
Sorry, Neil, I think I overlapped you.
No, I was just going to say, I guess I'm being a little utopian in the sense that if there's a consumer demand for this, that industry could work with the various stakeholders, consumers, and come up with that standard, if you will, that could allow for that efficiency to take place. I just need to get myself more educated as to what the barriers are. If you think about the financial industry, you know, there's plenty of folks who are allowing for the ability to aggregate access, credentialed access to multiple places. And yeah, it was a bit rocky in the beginning, but it's generally working pretty well. And I'm just trying to understand what the role of us putting a specific set of recommendations are versus letting industry working with consumer groups figure it out.
I think the complexity here is that, and I'm not saying there isn't the same, you know, B2B and B2B2C stuff that happens on the financial side, but the fundamental differences in payer systems versus provider systems that allow access for the patient, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but my understanding is most of the patient access systems from a provider side or a facility side are individual-based. Most of the payer systems, based on my own knowledge working for multiple payers, the access systems are actually subscriber-based. So there's a fundamental difference with the way they work, and just quite honestly, to make it a level playing field, there needs to be, and maybe it does need to be, a policy as well as a technical standard, but there needs to be something in the background that allows it to be a common playing field, because today the two largest groups of systems are based on different types of entry and access. That's the problem.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it gets really complicated when you think about even the current interoperability rule, which provides for a patient to have individual access, and you're a payer and you have a confidential communication under HIPAA that impacts that subscriber family, having to make that when one is based on one a family and one is based on an individual, even just making that happen is difficult for all the payers. So just based on all the conversations we're having on how to make the two common when it's two different, you know, sets, one's individual and one is subscriber, is difficult. So as we've been talking about it, I think that these things have come up. And I'm just saying, since we're touching on these subjects, I do think we should address it and make a standard so that we all then have a future to drive to. Otherwise, it's going to end up being every payer implements it differently, just like every provider implements it differently, and it makes it harder to adopt to these standard types of credentialing that we're trying to go to.
So I guess as I'm listening to this and having worked in deploying the direct protocol and thinking about X509 digital certificates and the ability for those certificates to be issued by trusted entities and exchanged with a certain set of rules, that has been sort of advanced from a technical architecture perspective, and I'm trying to link that my old world with this conversation, Cheryl, part of the dynamic I'm hearing is that the stand part of the issue is knowing who's who in the zoo and who can actually get which data and which communications, and knowing because we don't have it, we don't. And because we have patients moving in different places with different kinds of plan setups, it's that there's a best practices that may be missing, not just a policy framework, but how are we all going to solve this and how are we going to treat Susie Q, the parent, different from Susie Q Jr. versus Susie Q the third. And so you've got a family that may all be covered under Susie Q the employed, but there are three flavors of Susie Q, and how do you know which Susie Q do you give which data at which time to respect privacy?
Right. Well, that's, of course, the problem that, you know, we're all facing right now because of the fact that most payers are subscriber-based versus individual. And, you know, of course, we've all made modifications to the systems over the years to address the state laws and other things regarding, you know, individual access. But, you know, I think people would actually be even surprised at the low number of adoption of, you know, individuals on their electronic access that currently exists. So, okay. You know, at the end of the day, what all I'm saying is since it is a different grouping of how the data is typically accessed, it's not really, I mean, credentialing is one part of it, but I also look at it and say we have an issue with consents because I want to know that Susie Q, the adult child, allowed Susie Q, the mom, to access her records if that's the case and for whatever certain situations. And often I can't get access to any of those consents. I have to go with a trust factor that the consent was signed and that it does allow for that. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to get more complicated and it's going to get more widespread. And to me, the credentialing and access and consent should be kind of tied together. And we would want to be able to make that as simple as possible for patients so that they can get the data. I mean, there was an example that was provided the other day on one of the Karen calls where these individuals, it took them 37 days to get the documents to the doctor so the doctor could review them. And then once the doctor said that he couldn't make an appointment, they need to refer them to someone else. They needed another consent. Well, if we had electronic consent, that could have been done on the fly, on the phone, so that those records could go, and that cost the patient another 2 weeks. I mean, to me, that's what we're trying to address with having standards that provide for, if the patient desires, some sort of background service that can provide more ready access to their records, you know, through these services. That's all. And Arian raised his hand.
Okay. Awesome. Arian?
Yeah, thank you. So as a technical matter, and the reason I was sort of focusing on the standards and certification here is that as a technical matter, all of these standards or all of the modern standards are based on OAuth 2, which allows for separation of each of these areas. There's a business model and policy coordination piece that's clearly important. I went through some of the White House work on NSTIC back in the day, and that just got ugly and political really quickly, which is where my caution about, you know, staying in our lane and making sure that we're focused on the right things. So I just want to reassure people as a technical matter that first of all these comments are right on. We should be separating identity assurance, and authentication from authorization and access to these services. There's a burden that's placed on folks from a HIPAA perspective to be able to meet the HIPAA obligation that in turn drives a ton of burden on patients and also on providers. And there are technical means. And the good news is there are technical means to solve all this. The bad news is there's business model issues. and policy issues. And so that's where my recommendation comes from, to focus on the ideal state and focus on making sure that any of the standards and certifications that are built get designed from the perspective of separating identity and authorization, or identity and authentication from access and use of the underlying services, so that you can separate these identities. But also, where a little my caution of let's not boil the ocean here, because a lot of the stuff we're talking about gets really complicated and also highly political quickly. So anyway, that's the meta comment. Thank you.
I don't see any other hands raised, Alex, but I do think we got a lot of good suggestions out of this, and I think we're at a place where we could synthesize it now down to ideal state and guiding principles, and maybe a recommendation to consider what needs to be looked at from a certification perspective.
Yes, I have not looked at the agenda because I'm on showing my screen,
okay.
So I'm not sure where I'm at in the agenda. I know we had a few, like the one other item that we possibly wanted to discuss here today that got raised. Do we have time to do that right now, or is that something we need to ask people to maybe?
I think we can do that. I think that's more important than reviewing the outline. So we'll move to the outline.
But I want to make sure that we absolutely share the outline so that people are aware what's going to come across their desk and their homework come Friday.
Yep.
So thank you for managing the time there. We do have public comment at 4:20. I do remember that part. So let's ask Andy to come back on to center stage and see if we can't put a little framing around a new principle for us to consider.
Sure, thanks for that. It's a pretty straightforward thing. I think that in our recommendations, we should be focused upon the end results we're looking to achieve, as opposed to prescribing necessarily how to achieve them. Because I think there's many ways to skin these cats, and we don't want to be inadvertently either be felt to be overreaching or to be have the unintended consequences. For example, we were using the language seamless logon earlier. Sorry, we're using single sign-on. But there are other ways of achieving the same end goal. That was kind of my sentiment there. And I'll be interested what others think.
I agree with you, Andy. I think we should be using words like without additional burden and things of that nature rather than some of the prescriptive that we have. But at the same time, we were asked, especially by High Tech last time, to be clear about if we're making a recommendation, whether it's a policy or a standard or something of that nature. But I do agree with the way in which we're doing it. We need to make sure we're not prescribing a particular solution.
Yes, thanks, Cheryl. And I think the second part of that, and where I was commenting earlier, was we said something about data models. I'm not sure that we would be maybe we would, in which case let's discuss, but I'm not sure we would be recommending the creation of the capital T data model, capital D, capital M, for a particular purpose. We would be creating or causing to be created illustrative data and or information models, I think. Is that fair?
This is Alex, and you broke up a little bit for me in that sentence, last sentence that you made. I feel like I feel like I would have to carry this conversation forward into the review of the recommendations to date to see how to balance this, because I feel like it's hard for me to think about this comment without looking at the body of work that we've already synthesized to see if we've tripped into what you're trying to avoid us tripping into.
I've reviewed everything that's been created so far. I know I haven't been that vocal until today, really. a couple of other times, and I don't think we have. I think it's just that every now and then it's just looking at the way we phrase something so that we're not recommending that something gets created which might have the unintended consequence of forcing some kind of effort to be done that actually doesn't need to be done, because we can keep things implementation guidance separate. Maybe I'm not being clear. I wouldn't mind if somebody else chips in if they agree with me to try and phrase it better.
I know we have a couple folks in the queue.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sorry, did you say me? This is Anil.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, so I think in general I agree with what Andy is saying, but I think we have to, let's go back, for example, to the comment I had made around single sign-on. That wasn't what I wasn't saying we should be using single sign-on. I was simply giving it as an example. And I think it's important for us to focus on the what outcomes we want, but to then to also provide some real examples of how that could be achieved without picking winners and losers of how one might implement something like that. So I agree with Andy, but I think without examples, without tangible examples, it's really hard to get down into what is it we're really trying to say, because otherwise it's just a bunch of goals without guardrails and without some way to point to what's actually happening today and what is it that we really want different. So there might be areas where we'll need to get not into the exact implementation, but examples of how there's disparate ways of doing the same thing. And in some cases, it's fine. But in other cases, those disparate ways of doing things is what's causing the problem. And so I don't know how you can get at what we're all trying to achieve without getting into, once in a while, getting into the how and not just focusing on the outcomes. But let me pause there.
So if I can just respond to that quickly, very quickly. I agree with Anil. I think we need to give examples. We just need to be clear that these are examples. These are not directions.
And I think that there's so I'm going to defer my comment to Jocelyn. She's had her hand up. Ms. Keegan, are you on
mute? I'm just working on getting myself off of mute. Yeah. So I really appreciate the points that are being made here. And I think that the specificity of examples is important. And I think as we think about the construct of the report, there should be a place for us to provide exemplars. But that our focus needs to be on what is the outcome and the policy that we think should be enacted. And the how isn't, I think, for us to be prescriptive, except by examples, unless there's a place that we have consensus that we should be prescriptive. And I think that, Andy, that's part of what we're going to be doing as part of the actual editing of the report. I think that sort of calling that out as a focus area for us, right? Sort of the law of unintended consequences, that we should always be mindful to make sure that we're separating out, for example, right? Not a, this is the way it shall be done.
Jocelyn, that concept of Andy's really helping us to hone our pencil thinking going into this first real draft, a review of a draft, is such a gift. I was exactly where I wanted to head and say that this is a really good stopping point for us, because I think it provides a natural glide path to us pivoting to the next documents that we can sort of queue up before we go to our public comment period in 5 minutes. And so it looks very small on my screen, but the point being, I wanted to show you the report outline is on one page, and I will make it bigger, but I wanted you to see before I honed in on a portion so that Cheryl and I can walk you through this, this is essentially an outline. I won't necessarily call it a table of contents because it's a little bit deeper than that, but it is in effect the structure that we are proposing, and the document that we are producing for your review will follow this. And with that set up, Cheryl, I'm going to make it bigger.
Okay.
And
I'll talk, talk us through it. And my suggestion is, let me get through the narrative that I prepared for this, and then we'll go to public comment, and then we'll come back and see if people have questions. But because where we are with time. But essentially what we drew was, sort of the thought process that we looked at the interoperability at intersection, which drove us to integration, which drove to improvement. And essentially we're saying clinical administrative data are not interoperable, which leads to burden at points where the data need to intersect in support of healthcare, such as for authorization. So making the data and related policy frameworks interoperable will allow integration at these points of intersection and allow more effective and efficient use of data and resources to improve care delivery and health outcomes. That's the overarching theme. And so what we've done is identify that we have front matter, which is our ONC charge, and we reviewed that multiple times. We will have a foreword by the co-chairs, which is Alex and I, and then the task force membership. Then we're going to go into the executive summary. And here, we're really going to build on the fact that we've got a problem that we're going to define. And here is where we talk a little bit about how ONC can create a competitive marketplace to encourage IT developers to create innovative solutions that will enhance the quality of care and improve patient engagement while reducing unnecessary burden among stakeholders. And this is going to focus on what is the problem, what we have looked at in terms of the solution. We will be talking a little bit about the purpose behind NCVHS, which serves as the statutory public advisory body to the Secretary of Health and Human Services for health data, and focus on their aspect of implementing HIPAA, where HITECH really focuses on the ability to inventory the kinds of information that each party will provide for supporting an interoperable environment, and ensuring that all of the components within the ecosystem will be able to implement the health information technology infrastructure both nationally and locally, and advance the electronic access, exchange, and use of health information. So we talked about that. Then we focus on the standards analysis. And this really comprised of us coming up with the data classes, the work that we did to analyze the standards, the invitation to all of the partners and stakeholders who came and spoke to us that represented all of the different types of work that they're currently doing, our analysis of these standards and stakeholders, and what that means to the overall landscape, and the ability to use these components to outline and drive our ideal state and our guiding principles and our recommendations. Then we move on to our findings and recommendations, which include a description of our ideal state, as well as the guiding principles. And we had 8 guiding principles that we defined, which may be supplemented by the work that Alex reviewed with you earlier today on the broader intersection, and then focus on all of the recommendations that we made. And I think we had 12 or 13 recommendations that also might grow as a result of the work that we did today. And then we will have some amount of summary and conclusion. But that's just a brief overview of what we will be including in the report. And I think we have now 1 minute to go to public comment. So let's do that, and we'll come back for questions.
I just want to do one last little thought here while they're queuing that up, that one of the appendices will be the meeting presentation summaries. We released for task force review a complete summary of all the presenters. And we thank those individual that gave us feedback. We're incorporating that, and that will become an appendix of probably about 30 to 40 pages alone for summarizing that. So, Lauren?
Great. Thanks, Alex. We'll ask the operator to open the line.
Yes, thank you. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, it is star 1 on your telephone keypad.
Thank you. And do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. Back to you, Alex.
All right, Alex, do we want to throw back the outline? Or
that would be up. Yes, but that would be up to the Excel. I didn't stop sharing. Did you stop sharing my screen?
They're making it bigger. Okay. So let's open it to the task force. Any questions or comments on the outline of the draft report? The expectation is that we are going to work with the editor after today's meeting, Alex and I, and get a draft of the report out to everyone by Friday so that you can review it, provide your comments, and then the next couple of weeks we will spend iterating the changes related to the final draft, which are due to be delivered to HITECH by October 14th.
So what that really means is that we would like it if folks could find time next week to review the compiled draft report that will follow this outline, because I so far I'm not seeing any hands come up, Cheryl, so I'm perceiving that as support for the flow that you walked us through, and thank you for Andy giving us a check mark thumbs up. And so what would happen is we'll work through the initial draft, try to clean it up as much as possible, and that there will be instructions that we'll send out for how we will ask you to review and comment on it. But we may also have a scenario that we envision of needing to ask folks to give us some very specific content or concepts to bridge gaps that we identify, or to help bolster up a particular section. So there, we've noticed in our review with the editor that there's some questions for those who, from somebody who's not actually been in the weeds of trying to pull all this together, that we, instead of trying to make up what we think are the linkages, we're likely to ask some folks who have done some synthesizing work to date to maybe give us the missing concept, or if we point something out, we want to ask you about it, just to make sure that we're not misinterpreting what people may have submitted. So we will provide a complete draft that likely has some comments and maybe points out a request to those who have done a tremendous amount of work, and we just want to make sure that we're not monkeying with things that you may have intended as we try to wordsmith for flow and one voicing.
Very well said, Alex. I still see no hands raised. Why don't we go to the next slide then in the deck, and we can review the next steps. Have there been any folks that have raised their hand for public comment?
There are no comments at this time.
All right. So, you know, we just to recap. All right. So we've done the prior authorization synthesis. We've done meeting presentation summaries and reviewed those. Now we've reviewed the report outline. Now we're going to work on incorporating the broader intersection content, and then we're going to distribute a complete initial draft by October 2nd. The next 2 weeks are going to be focused on getting your input on that draft and iterating that draft to a state that we'll be happy to present to HITECH. Also, in the meantime, Alex and I will be working on the deck that will go to HITECH for the update of the recommendations to them. And then our expectation is to review this at the HITECH meeting on October 21st, and then discuss the comments that come back from HITECH with this group on October 27th. Any questions on our next couple of weeks? All right, well, I guess that's a wrap. Alex, would you like to end with any comments?
At this point, I'm just eager to get the complete draft in their hands and have them give us such another round of really thoughtful comments and feedback. I really do think that we are on the cusp of pulling together a report that can help move the needle, not only on prior authorization, but help inform downstream efforts that further advance the intersection of clinical administrative data, and that the organizations that have authorities can actually help move the needle by further collaboration, which is what got us to this task force in the first place. So I'm getting really excited for what's going to happen over the month of October.
Well said. I'm giving you a hand.
Thank you. Right. Right back at you, Cheryl.
I see no one with their hand raised, so we'll turn it over to Lauren for the next meeting. But thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for not only today, but your input, your commitment to this long time period to get to this point and help us, you know, keep it going and so we can come up with the best product possible.
Great. Thanks, Cheryl. And we shall meet again next week on the 6th of October. Thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.